The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the board, staff, underwriters, and donors of Voice of Vashon. Well, good afternoon, all of Vashon and other parts of the U.S. Just got word that my sister in St. Paul, Minnesota is listening today, too. So each week we are spreading out further and further. We were just sitting around here talking about some of the aspects of Vashon that I'm still learning since I live in Tacoma. I'm not an islander. I only work on the island. But it seems as though there are so many fascinating people on this island that have so much wisdom and so many stories to share that I've always kind of looked at Vashon as somewhat of a healing vortex for a lot of people to grow emotionally or spiritually or in any number of ways. And I'm happy to say that today I have I have a four-legged guest here named Andy. And I have two-legged guests here that are going to talk about some very interesting aspects that I'm sure we've all come in contact with one way or another. We have Lynn with us, and we also have our guest Robin talking about, well, they're talking about guide dogs and about PTSD, and we are going to learn an awful lot this afternoon about both subjects and more. So, Robin, we're glad to have you today, and Lynn?
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about kind of what you have going on here, Robin, and how you can share some of your information with us.
Well, Andy is a fully trained, fully accredited service dog. I am a military veteran that served from 1979 to 1988. And I have PTSD, which is called post-traumatic stress syndrome, unless some people don't know what that is. Also, a lot of people refer to it as an invisible disability. When you see me, when you see me walking around or jogging, and I have a service dog, you wonder what might be wrong with me and why do I have a service dog? And so PTSD for military, and I'm only speaking from my experience and the experience of other military members, but the general public can also have PTSD because of different events that happen in their life. It is stored in your central nervous system. So when an event happens, it is stored there, and it's a memory that happens into your body. So a trigger can happen when it could be a look that somebody has. It can be a situation that is occurring. It can be a smell. And for me, most of the time is an extremely loud noise or a quick movement or something. Silverware dropping in a restaurant is probably one of the worst things that can happen to me. And fireworks. And the reason is because I was a police officer, and that was kind of my day job. I also worked town patrol in Korea, and I also was a SWAT team leader and a sharpshooter, the only female, and I was on a special mobility forces team of 44 men, and I was the only female. And I was a sharpshooter in those situations. So a loud noise, gunfire, being shot at is the biggest thing that is a trigger for me. And it could be different for different people.
No doubt. And I'm sure everybody has their own experiences. And once again, we're talking about post-traumatic stress syndrome. And fortunately with Robin here today, she's helping educate a lot of us exactly what that means. And how oftentimes when we see someone with a service dog, you want to ask questions because you're curious. And, you know, some of the questions are appropriate and perhaps some of them aren't really appropriate. And Robin, I'm sure you've been asked a lot of different questions when people see you with Andy. And I got to tell you, Andy is probably one of the coolest Black Lab. What a beautiful, beautiful creature.
Yeah.
So somebody, you were sharing a story with me the other day of somebody actually seeing you get out of your vehicle after driving, and Andy steps out of the vehicle with you, and someone came up and asked you...
if I was blind.
After driving into the parking lot. Hey, people feel awkward, and you know, it's sometimes it's one of those cases where put the brain intact before you put the mouth in motion.
Right.
So, well, what would you suggest would be some of the do's and don'ts as far as maybe, you know, service dog etiquette and how to communicate with somebody like yourself?
Yeah, that's a perfect question because it's one that I try to kindly educate people. But one thing I did want to mention, if we can step back one second.
Oh, absolutely.
I meant to mention that when PTSD is stored in your central nervous system, when we experience that again, we relive it 100 times worse as if in that moment that it occurred to us. And it also, it causes damage in your brain and especially in your frontal cortex where you store emotion. And I have no control over my emotion when I am triggered.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't there several different variations of PTSD? For instance, if a child has an experience versus someone that has an experience later in life, such as military, or I guess it could be even different from domestic violence situations.
Well, it's whatever was traumatic for you.
Ah, that sums it up.
Yeah, you know, it's whatever is traumatic that to you.
So having Andy with you is basically your security blanket. Can you share with us a little bit about how a service dog is trained?
Well, so Andy started his training when he was 3 days old out of Salem, Oregon with Joys of Living Assistant Service Dogs. And their training is very, very regimented. He's part of the prisoner training program. So they start with them. Like 2 weeks, they're assigned to a prisoner, or maybe two prisoners, and they're extensively trained, basically, you know, 24 hours a day. Of course, they get to be a dog. They get to be, you know, played with, and they get to make sure they have good mental health as a dog. And it gives them confidence and security about their training, and they don't know they're being trained to be of service to someone for PTSD.
Got it.
So one of the things, so they're 2 weeks in prison and then they're 2 weeks out of prison with a socializer who then takes the notes that the prisoner wrote that week and said, Andy learned to sit today. Andy learned to sit and stay while I bounced a ball. Crossed him. Andy learned to sit when I dropped a pan on the floor. So they start with their PTSD training right off the top.
So I would imagine part of the training with you and Andy is how Andy picks up certain cues from you.
Well, he is trained on those cues.
I got
so after he was trained for 19 months. And so in the 2 weeks that he's not in prison, he's with a socializer who takes the prisoner's notes and says, okay, I think we're going to go to Target today and we're going to see if he can sit and stay in the meat department. You know, and can Andy sit and stay and a big cart comes by? Can Andy sit and stay while my kid is playing soccer and watching a ball go back and forth, right? Because primarily he's a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was your question? I'm so sorry.
Well, I don't even know what my question was. What was the question, Lynn? Well, I'm so fascinated by all this information.
Oh, the training. Okay, yeah.
For your cues.
Okay, for my cues. Yeah, so... when he gets probably around, and I might be corrected by this, when he gets around 13 months of his training, like I've applied, right? So let's say I've applied for the service dog. Mm. So I've applied for one. Then they sit around, and I think it's about every 3 weeks, they have a staff that takes all the prisoner's notes, all the socializer's notes, all the training notes, and they have a picture of Andy, they have a picture of me, they have a picture of Bob, you know, the dog, you know, they have a picture of all the clients that are ready to get to be matched, as well as the dogs that are ready to be matched with the person. And they say, well, we think, you know, well, Robin travels and she's a musician, she likes to run and hike. And they'll say, gosh, you know, Andy is looking like he likes to run. He likes to hike. He likes to be adventurous. He doesn't mind sitting in really tall, tight spaces, because they replicate like an airplane. Replicate. They start them when they're very tiny, and they put them in the back of remote-controlled dump trucks before they even have their eyes open, and they remote control the entire litter around, so they get used to movement and tight spaces.
Interesting. Wow.
What was your dang question? I forgot. Already.
Okay. Well, I don't even have to ask any questions. You're really filling us in. But
all right. So yeah. So for him to get, so what he knows. When I get anxious, they get closer to that time frame, they have on my application, when I start to get anxious, I will scratch my face. When I start to get anxious, I will dig at my hands. I will pull my hair. So then they will replicate that.
Okay.
And then he is trained to stop me from doing that. He will jump in my lap and he'll throw my hands apart, and then he'll stare at me, or he'll nudge me and lick me and he'll basically say, no, Mom.
Okay, so that kind of breaks the cycle that maybe you are starting to go into.
That's exactly right.
Gotcha.
That's the precursor to me going to a full-blown flashback.
Interesting.
Right.
Well, you know, when people see a dog, and Vashon is such a pet-happy island anyway.
Right.
First thing I want to do is get down and pet the dog.
Right.
And first thing you don't want to do is get down and pet a service dog, correct?
There's some service dogs that are trained more for comfort dogs, you know, like a lot of children that have to testify in court, or that have an anxiety disorder. It depends on what type of service dog that it is. You should always ask first, can I pet your dog?
Good point.
Right. It's a good point. And for him, because of my PTSD, if he is distracted, and he has a patch on his back that says giant letters, service dog, PTSD, do not distract. If you're talking to him and you're not acknowledging me, they'll say, oh, I can't pet you, but you're so cute. And he just looks at you like, are you... You know, what? You're distracting my dog. Mm. Because now I might start to scratch. I might, I might start to show some signs. If he's distracted, he's going to miss that sign. And in seconds, which Lynn can tell you about today, I can go to full-blown PTSD, and it is ugly.
Well, Lynn, what does that look like?
Robin, we were in our Spanish class this morning, and there was a noise and a quick movement, and Robin, it was horrible to watch it. Robin screamed a lot and climbed under the table and was hitting her head on the table, which is something that you do, I guess. And you know, of course, I think most people don't know what to do in that situation. And luckily, but, it, you know, our class was very supportive, I thought. You know, they were very nice because Robin had explained ahead of time what not to do. And one thing not to do is to call 911. Is that right, Robin?
Well, that's the case for me, for sure.
Yeah.
Because 911 to me represents a uniform showing up. It represents somebody probably with a gun. And that to me, they don't know that I've got this military background that I was being shot at. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
So the people that have PTSD are, there is no cookie cutter. Everybody has a separate experience.
Exactly.
That is going to be relating to something else. Mm-hmm. That's why I think educating the public, having this opportunity to talk about this, is something that people typically don't have an expert here that they can ask these kind of questions to, mm-hmm. and get more better informed. Mm-hmm. One of the things you did mention when you were talking about Andy's training was some of the criteria is we want the dog that is going to be with Robin to be comfortable in small places. In other words, I know you have an extremely well-rounded life, and I know you love to travel, and you have some exciting things coming up too. Can you touch upon that a little bit too, about some of the other things you have going on in your life? You don't just walk around with a dog, and you're not just in a Spanish class, and you mentioned jogging and running, and there's a few other things on the shopping list right there too. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I do want to talk about it. But I also want to mention that before I got Andy, I could not go into a public place, literally nowhere. I couldn't go into Thriftway. I couldn't go into IGA. I couldn't go into a library unless someone was with me, because if I did have a flashback, they just thought I was nuts.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And they thought maybe I was on drugs. They would call 911. Nobody knew what to do whatsoever. So since I got Andy, I am confident that he is going to be able to take care of me.
Wow.
And he is going to be there. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be by my side. So that being said, I was able to travel to Mexico for 2 months. And we did very well. We've traveled to Hawaii, but the biggest thing that we're doing, and it's just him and I don't have a friend or relative going with me, as I'm going on Wild Atlantic music tours to Ireland. I am a fiddler, and I'm going with John Whelan here on the island, who's a famous accordion player, and we're embarking on this huge journey internationally together. And I feel confident.
Absolutely. And there's a reason we call this show Adventures in Recovery. Because it truly is an adventure.
Right.
And we don't define ourselves by our past. You know, we might have certain diagnoses or certain labels or this and that. But oftentimes that just opens a door to other opportunities. Look at you. You're traveling all the way across the globe to go to, where did you say, Dublin? Or
Well, I'm starting in Galway, and then I think we're going up the West Coast. I have the flyer here, but in case anybody else wants to come along.
Oh, my gosh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Can I see that for a second?
Sure.
To be a professional fiddler, and if I'm not mistaken, Lynn, aren't you a fiddler as well? Or?
Oh, I wish I was, no.
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking of our guest for next week, who's also a fiddler, and we'll get into that in just a couple of minutes, but the Irish Music Tour, accompanied by John Whelan. Boy, does that sound fascinating. And that is actually coming up September 14th to the 21st.
Right.
And if anybody ever has any questions that they would like to direct to any of the guests that I have on the air here, I'm going to give you my email address, and I'd be happy to forward any of these questions to any of the guests that we've ever had or that we will have in the future, and that is T, as in Tom, my first name, Walston, W-A-L-S-T-E-N, that's T, Walston, at VYFS.org. And that VYFS, of course, is Vashon Youth and Family Services.
Yep.
So
that's great. So I wanted to put it out there that if anybody wanted to get a hold of Tom, and you would like your organization, you know, the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, places of business, or you know, those kind of community
Rotary.
Type of things, the Rotary, Police Department, the Vashon Fire. If you wanted me to come and speak and give a demonstration, I am more than glad to do that. I really want to educate the public, and especially Vashon is a small community, and people see me out and about, and they don't know what is my disability, because I'm not missing an arm or a leg. And I actually have had people ask me, you know, do you have a prosthetic leg or something? Or they see me with a dog and they feel like I'm public domain all of a sudden. And it's not like I say, you're wearing a polka dotted shirt, so what's wrong with you?
Right.
You know, but
well,
yeah.
That's a very, very good point. And for clarification, there are certain parameters of legal questions they are allowed to and not allowed to ask you. Is that correct?
That is totally correct. They can ask if the dog has been trained, what the task the dog or tasks the dog has been trained to perform.
Okay.
They can't ask you what your disability is. A lot of times it's a hint, right? He's trained to disrupt flashbacks, right? Then also that's a hint. And also, is he accredited or is she an accredited service dog? And I get asked that a lot in restaurants. And I'm totally glad that they do, because a well-trained service dog, it represents all of us that have well-trained service dogs. People that, maybe will get in trouble for this, but people will go into Target, and I've literally seen them at Target hanging as you come in the door, these vests that say service dogs, and people are buying them because they just want to be able to go out with them. And then their dog is, like, you know, out of control.
So there's no regulation on who can put a vest on a dog that's a service dog?
Until you go to fly. When you go to fly, you have to prove that you have an accredited service dog, what organization you got it from, and they check it. They double
so
check
when
it.
When you go through TSA, you have to have the documentation to prove.
Even before you get your airline ticket.
Interesting.
Yes. And he's assigned a traveler's number. He has one for Alaska Airlines, and he also has one for United Airlines. And that's how we're going to fly. So,
wow.
There was one incident. Do I have time to talk about one incident?
Oh, yeah. We've got about 5 minutes.
Okay. So there was an incident that happened because I want to clarify to the public. Last week, I got out of my car. Nobody asked me if I was blind at this point.
This time.
And I was walking, going, headed into Ace Hardware, and there was a person who had a dog, a very big dog, and they weren't in control of this dog. I started to flash back to an incident when a sentry dog got loose when they were doing the training for taking a person down, you know, with the big puffy suit and all that. The dog saw me instead and didn't go for the handler. And I was bent over filling up a water bucket, and the dog came across and got a hold of my head and shook me like a rag doll. And I had all these puncture wounds.
This wasn't
that
Ace.
Skull.
This was years ago.
This was in Korea.
Yeah.
And we're talking sentry dogs that are, you can't even imagine what they're trained for.
Oh.
And so when I started to disassociate, when I saw this huge dog, that she did not have complete control of the dog. And she said to me, "You don't need to give me an ugly look. My dog is friendly." But I couldn't speak, you know, because I was staring, because I was starting to freeze. I was starting to disassociate. So if I don't talk to you when you answer me, you know, it's because maybe I'm already starting to dissociate. So if you ask me what's wrong with me, That immediately starts me to disassociate. Mm-hmm. So please don't ask me that.
Yeah.
You can talk about my dog. You can talk about, you know, maybe the training or something like that. Just be kind and thoughtful.
That's perfect.
Before you ask, yeah.
Exactly. And that applies to any case. Let's practice a little more sensitivity and a little more respect for our brothers and sisters that we come in contact with every day. I mean, you want to ask some questions, but you have to rethink it before, like I said, you engage your mouth.
Right.
So if somebody wanted to, let's say, make a donation to this organization, because it sounds like it's probably a huge nonprofit organization with service dogs.
It is a huge nonprofit organization. The acronym is JLAD, J-L-A-D. It's Joys of Living Assistance Dog in Salem. You do not have to be military PTSD.
Oh.
They train dogs for all types of PTSD, as well as anxiety disorders and mobility.
Interesting.
But only those two. They're very specific. That's the two basic, you know, the trainings that they do. And Andy is... has been, I think he's third generation. They train and breed specifically for PTSD and mobility.
And I love the concept of the inmates playing a role in this as well.
Mm-hmm. And they can follow us on our journey through Joys of Living Assistance Dog on Facebook. We're starting now of how to take a service dog all the way to Ireland.
You know, she could have her own documentary. In fact, that's kind of in the works right now, too.
It is. I'm working on that. Yeah. If anybody out there wants to help me out with that, it'd be great.
That would be awesome. Once again, you can get a hold of me at VYFS if you have any more questions. So, well, it's been a total joy having Robin Silva here, also having her friend, well, her four-legged friend, Andy, not to mention her two-legged friend, Lynn. Let's just cover the limbs here while we're at it. And ladies and gentlemen, next week I am very happy to announce we have somebody here that is going to talk about how we deal with grief and loss. It's something we all are going to experience it, and we probably already have experienced, but we don't really have any protocol. We've never had a culture show us what steps you take to deal with your grief and loss. And I'll tell you what, this woman is a writer. She's got a master's in psychology. She's a grief counselor and educator. And not only that, but she's also a fiddler. And her name is Rondi Lightmark. So she'll be with us next Tuesday. And that's going to be at 1:30 every Tuesday for Adventures in Recovery. And once again, this is Tom Walston saying thank you so much for listening. And this island has so much more to offer. So stay tuned. We'll look forward to being with you again next week.